Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Devin Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction Tribe? Devin Tilley here, and we have the fortune today to talk with the Mr. Johnny Fortune. He's the executive director of the National BIM Program. And I'm so jazzed for this conversation because we've spent so many years with our friends at Digital Built Week talking around what is BIM. And a story I've told many times about Ben Glunz, who runs BIMsmith. When I was going down this journey of BIM, he's done a great job of over the years and many podcasts around that. But the main message that we want to convey to you, Tribe, is that how can we standardize BIM? Because the longer I play the great game of BIM in the business world of connecting the digital to the physical, it goes all over the place. But how does this benefit you is knowing how the government and industry players are working to standardize BIM can show you a pathway of how to get involved. And boy, does that excite me, because we just did a podcast with the Housing Innovation Alliance and talked about ESG and the governance part of that whole thing of connecting this word of digital twins, where we do podcasts that turn into digital octuplets to protect the different words around the US. All this stuff is going a lot of different directions. And my perspective from the second episode for our series leading up to Digital Built Week 2023 in Dallas, Johnny is going to be talking at the conference around a national BIM program. We're always talking about our system build program through the Art of Construction Master Facilitators, and I could not agree more. We need a standardized BIM kit of parts to handle these local municipalities and actually make these video games turn into reality. So without further ado, I'm so stoked to go in and get to know Johnny Fortune's story and talk about BIM through the national program. Lock and load, Tribe. What's your favorite beverage?
I'm a huge soda advocate. I love Coke Zero. Can't get enough of it. Delicious.
All right. What about the favorite place you've traveled, Mr. Johnny Fortune?
Many years ago, a tour of Israel. So super special place with a lot of history and amazing culture. I had a great time there in Israel.
Awesome. Can you give us one story from that experience?
I think just going to the Weeping Wall and seeing different people having come from around the world and writing down their prayers and kind of folding it up in a little piece of paper and sticking it in the wall. It's really quite interesting to see so many people travel from all over the world, and that's a meaningful spot for a lot of folks.
Awesome. Well, thank you for sharing that. And what is your favorite hobby or interest outside of the BIM silos that we passionately call the Art of Construction we're going to talk about?
Well, I'm a long-time avid gamer. I, as you might imagine, I don't have as much time to do that anymore, but I still love to grab the controller or get on the PC and fight with my boys in an online match.
Awesome. So what is your story that led you to being the BIM program director at the National Institute of Building Sciences?
Well, I come from a long history in the building industry. I come from a construction family, so grew up around the job site. Had a lot of experience over many years, even as a teenager and young adult. Worked in the building design for over 20 years at different AEs, and with a technology focus, became more involved in standards development and finding better ways to do things. Volunteered over a decade at different standards development for things like the National CAD standard and National BIM standard. I was fortunate enough to rewrite the VA BIM documents a few years back, and the VA BIM guide and their deliverable requirements. And so when the opportunity arose to lead this national BIM program with the National Institute of Building Sciences, I jumped at it. And so I've found my fit in life. This suits me to a T.
So I'm just going to start this thing by calling myself out. I bet I've done... You could look at 25 plus podcasts where I've talked about BIM. I've never had one person ever tell me about a national BIM program, and I've never even heard of it. So when I heard this, I was like, wow, there actually is one of these things? I've had all these conversations and it's never come full circle. So tell us more about the background of the National Institute of Building Sciences that we probably should all know about, that I'll just call it, maybe I'm the only one.
No, I think that's probably true of a lot of folks. I think a lot of folks know more about some of the things that we've done and some of the products that we've put out there than they do actually know the source of those products. So the National Institute of Building Sciences, which we refer to easily as NIBS, has been around about 50 years. The Congress passed enabling legislation to form NIBS, and it was really aimed at solving interoperability issues, ironically, in the building industry. And I chuckle slightly because there are still many, many interoperability issues in the industry. And so there's still much work to do. We're a nonprofit entity, and we provide annual reports to the president about what's happening in the building sciences. We have some of our board members are appointed by the president of the U.S. So we are in an interesting position to bridge the gap between public and private sectors. And so what our role is we convene subject matter experts from across the industry to come together to solve building industry challenges. We work with various government agencies. We also have 9 different councils. We have the stewardship of the whole building design guide, which many people who work in the design industry are very familiar with, to go and get the requirements, read the requirements from different agencies. We have other councils that are focused on things like seismic safety and offsite construction. We also have a BIM technology council, and some of the products that your audience may be aware of, more familiar with than they are with NIBS themselves, is some of the things we've put out over the years, like the National CAD Standard, which is a long-standing, well-known in the design industry, a standard for CAD design. We also put out the National BIM Standard and a product a few years ago called the National BIM Guide for Owners.
Yeah, again, I'm just, thank you so much for teeing this thing up for us here for the conversation, because the amount of acronyms and abbreviations in this industry just blow my mind, of NIBS and BIMS and NCS and this, where we have dedicated what we call system build around offsite construction. And a lot of this stuff has these negative connotations that may not been around for a while. Can you tell us more about the BIM program in NIBS and talk about how it came together and who is in this program?
Sure. Well, as I mentioned, we have, you know, different councils, and one of those councils is the BIM Council. It's been around for many years and has been working on things like the National BIM Standard. But we realized that we weren't seeing the needle move fast enough in the industry. And so we began to think about, well, how can we accelerate digital transformation? What can be done to drive BIM adoption? And we there's been so many reports to the industry about the value that BIM can bring, and candidly, many stakeholders are just not realizing that value, or the adoption of the technology was still slower than one, you know, had anticipated. So we brought together 40 different business and government leaders from the nation, and had an executive roundtables and discussed and strategized how we could go about accelerating digital transformation here in the built environment. And so we have had and continue to have a great representation from both public and private sector. On the public side, we've had folks from GSA, the Army Corps of Engineers, the Veterans Affairs Department, Department of State, some of the Department of Transportation representatives, as well as the, you know, Federal Highway Administration. So we have in that group both perspectives of not only building construction, but also infrastructure and roads and dams and bridges. So we have a good representation on the public side, but we also have on the private side, we have several key firms that have participated, including HDR and WSP, NBBJ. Software vendors have participated as well, like Autodesk, Bentley, and Esri, and construction firms like DPR, Hansel Phelps, and several who have been involved, as well as some big tech has been involved, Microsoft, Google, and AWS. So we're thankful that we were able to convene all of these different perspectives together to form this National BIM program, which is relatively new. So even though the council has been around for for quite some time. The BIM program really just formed back in early 2021. And we spent a couple of years with different working groups and committees that represented all types of stakeholders across the industry to put together a five-year roadmap.
Fascinating. And thank you for sharing, like, talk about a lot of big players that definitely gets our attention, right? But then we have to figure out how that, you know, mass adoption, right, from 2021 to taking the NIBS to the National BIM Council. What is the overall goal of the BIM program in NIBS, and what is your plan to get there?
So we really want to accelerate digital transformation of lifecycle information for a facility, infrastructure, or building, and want to do that through the rapid development and adoption of these open data standards. So we really see at the heart of everything that we want to accomplish really relies upon good data. And so we have, again, worked over a couple of years in developing an implementation plan and a five-year roadmap. And I would distill all of that information down to its four basic categories, which is raising awareness that so people know that this program is out there and some of the tools and resources that are available. Also to perform some additional industry market research. There's been several research studies, but many of them may be very isolated in the sample that they survey. So we'd like really something nationwide to get a better grasp of where folks are at on the adoption curve. And also, we'd like to develop and promote some open data standards. So the one key tenet of the program is to have open data standards so that we can more easily share information across project stakeholders. And finally, engaging the industry with more education and training and resources and tools that help people do what they're good at.
Absolute gold. Absolute gold. Love it. So we're here in the U.S., and maybe a few people are like me to say, God, that seems obvious in today's. Why would this not be the way it is? Can you talk about other places in the world? Because part of this Digital Built Week is there's people from all over the globe, and it's been fascinating. The longer we cast our net, the smaller this world seems to be, and how other countries and other places have been standardized. From your perspective, can you talk about how any other countries have maybe standardized BIM and how they have done it?
Sure. I think one of the best examples, one of the front runners, has been the UK. They did develop a soft mandate for BIM on all public funded projects. And so they mapped it out over several years, gave fair notice to all of those who would be participating on those projects about this. We call it a soft mandate. There's really no repercussions if you don't follow the mandate, but all in all, it was driven by government saying we want BIM to be used on these public projects. And then, of course, there was several aspects of BIM more defining what that actually meant and how it'd be accomplished. And so through that, they developed British standards, and they developed a roadmap and began to execute that roadmap. Those British standards then really were genericized, if you will, and became more of an international standards that different countries could adopt and use. And so other countries around the world have begun the adoption process of what we refer to as ISO 19650, which is all about how BIM should be executed on any given project. And so we are seeing other countries do the same process of adopting these international standards and basically developing a guide and an annex that translates it to local government use. And so one complicated piece for us in the U.S. is where other countries may have one branch of the government or one portion of the government that's in charge of all public construction projects. We have a lot. So we have GSA, we have Army Corps of Engineers, we have Federal Highway Administration. So we have a lot of entities that are involved. So it's very complicated to get all of those aligned on basically one BIM requirement for any given project. So that's a bit of the challenge that we face, and that's part of why it takes time to develop a roadmap and get buy-in and raise awareness and develop open standards really that works for everybody, for all the agencies, for both public and private, as well as for both buildings and infrastructure.
It really makes you think about the great old USA of where you can have the land of the free and all these different moving parts. And then the challenges of, if everybody does it different, how can we make construction move forward? And as a kid that grew up in South Dakota and rural towns, it's just been fascinating going down these journey of having these discussions around standard protocols. You say the word standard and a lot of people just fight it right off the bat, when in some places it should be that way, right? So it's really cool to see other places that we can go cast that net and bring it back. Can you tell us more about the government's interest in standardizing BIM and what benefits would this bring to them?
Well, off the top, it would eliminate waste. There's certainly a lot of resources that have been put through different agencies here in the U.S. that are all about defining standards and defining requirements. And so some of the agencies are really trying to solve some of the same problems. This would really be an opportunity to reallocate some of those resources that have been put towards specifying and creating standards. Many that I've talked to from these different agencies, they're not in the business of trying to create standards. They don't really necessarily want to create their agency specific standards. They are really created because there is an absence of national standards and that have been fully adopted across the board. So it frees up resources for them. It eliminates waste. It's a better use of their resources, as well as it's more consistent. It enables data to be used for additional purposes. It promotes decision-making, be reused for similar facilities. So there's really a lot of advantages, but at the top, I would say a reduction in waste.
All right. A podcast I've been getting a lot of feedback on of like, Devin, I really liked that podcast where he talked about a F blank blank buzzwords. And it was around all the different, the evolution of words like digital twins to digital octuplets. I've had so many people talk about that evolution when you really get into the BIM world and you talk about, you know, the mini silos, because we have no mainframe. And I hear about, and I'm like, well, I thought we didn't, but maybe we actually do have that. And so can you talk about, from your perspective, what is the relationship between BIM and digital twins from your perspective?
Well, it's complicated. It's a complicated relationship. It is one hard that is very difficult to define. And really what we hear is people have a lot of different definitions for that relationship between BIM and digital twins. They're closely related. There's obviously some similarities between the two. There are some subtle differences, and then there's some more contrasting differences. But what I've learned in many conversations that I have with folks is that a lot of times it depends on the stage of a project and a specific stakeholder's perspective. So to address, and this is a challenge, this is a challenge now in the industry, not only here in the U.S., but even abroad. If you ask folks what BIM means to them, you may get several answers. And lo and behold, the digital twins is now on the same track, where there's a multitude of definitions that people are having. So one thing that we've done to try to bring some clarity to the industry is we've recently formed a subcommittee that is focused specifically on this topic. Their charge is to define the relationship between BIM and digital twin. And so BIM has three lenses. There's, you know, people look at BIM as the model. They look at BIM in terms of modeling or the process. And then there are those that look at BIM in terms of overall management, which is, you know, building information management. So that in and of itself, those three lenses for that same acronym can cause confusion for some in the industry. And digital twin is certainly a definition that has evolved from the Digital Twin Consortium, which is a group that is focused on digital twins, but they're focused on the topic agnostic of which industry it relates to. So it could be a digital twin for, you know, a vehicle, or a digital twin for some other object, or it could be digital twins for buildings. So we see these baseline definitions from the National BIM Standard for BIM and the Digital Twin Consortium for the digital twin. And so we're working now to help define that relationship. And it is a complicated relationship. And I don't think it's one that we fully have explored the answer, but it's certainly something that we're working on to bring clarity to the industry. And if we can get people saying the same, using the same terminology and having the same definitions, that paves the way for us to advance together and make sure we're talking about the same thing.
Well, I guess I just want to call you out, Johnny, and say, what is your definition of a digital twin?
Well, I like to refer back to the Digital Twin Consortium. I think they are one of the foremost authorities on digital twins now, and they've done a lot of work through their membership and through the industry. Succinctly, it's a virtual representation that includes the processes synchronized with real-world entities. So to contrast that with BIM, where BIM is processed for modeling, for construction, and for design, construction, and operations, Digital Twin adds on an additional piece to the model that includes Internet of Things sensors. It includes a way to monitor those aspects of a building or a piece of infrastructure. It enables additional decision-making.
I absolutely love that, right? Of like how they're dissimilar, but so similar. And I actually think it's important that we understand these words matter and they are not the same thing. And ultimately, what do you see as the biggest obstacles to standardizing BIM in the US? And how can we move past these challenges and obstacles?
So it is very surprisingly that interoperability between software tools and platforms still poses a challenge for many in the industry. And while we have a lot of technology and we're almost daily seeing new tools, new solutions that are hitting the market, we still have this challenge of interoperability that sometimes when these solutions are chosen, it hamstrings the team a little bit to where they others on the team, they can't get the information that they need, or they're forced to use a tool that they're not as comfortable with. And so we see the way to get past this is really to have open data standards. And so that all of these tools follow a specific standard for exchanging information, exporting information and importing information, because it is in that process of exporting and importing information within these tools and platforms that some of this data is one, either lost or it no longer maintains its integrity. So we see open data standards is really a logical path forward to solving this big interoperability issue. And while we do have some tools that have ability to export into a format and import into a different format, in reality, many of these tools are simply, they don't work that well in terms of interoperability. And so there's no time savings. Any time savings that you might gain by using a particular tool, sometimes that time savings is gobbled up in some of the many steps you have to take to make it interoperable with other pieces of software. So surprisingly, that's still a big challenge. But other challenges also include, the initial cost. Like until you reach that breakpoint to where you're starting to see the return on investment, you break even that initial cost up front. So any technology change, there's going to be education and the change management piece that goes along with it. There's risk and legal concerns about how the model, can be used in the future and to what extent. There's the education piece, not only for the industry, but for the as a whole, but for the people who are doing the work. At the heart of it, we see open data standards is really the path to where our folks can use their software tool of choice. They can focus on their work and be successful, and yet they can pass information from one stakeholder to another without losing integrity of data.
Yeah, well said. It makes me think about like what is out there in the public and the evolution of different photogrammetry and different tools out there to say, Google Maps is this evolution of where you can recognize different measurements and different things that most people don't even know about that, in my opinion. But then it's like, how do you take that to the next level of this intellectual property? And that is something we really need some governance to help guide us on that. And I really agree with all of those things that you're talking about. As we work towards kind of closing this thing out, I'm really excited to ask you this question, because when I launched this podcast in 2014 and before we had 300 plus podcasts and a lot of people listened to this all over the globe, I always like such a technology guy, but I always struggled in my little world of like, how can I be part of these googlies, as they talk about in Tony Fadell's book when he took Nest, and the whole story of those type of thing of how do you play in that, you know, those big characters of this moving it forward. And then we have this question that we came out of that we've asked every time on every podcast. And we do that because, you know, innovation, when you get governance and people working together, can really move the needle forward, right? And it's these great conferences like Digital Built Week, where we come and we niche in of the original Revit users to then these people I'm meeting now around that have been around it for a while. It's fascinating to hear their stories of where we came from, where we are, and most exciting of where we're going, right? And that's why we ask this question of what is your crystal ball for the future with technology and construction?
Well, optimistically, and this certainly ties closely to my work with the National BIM Program, what we envision and hope to see. So if I'm looking clearly into a crystal ball, I hope to be able to see that the data is connected. It is protected. There's a cybersecurity component that we can't forget about. It is accessible. It's usable. It's comprehensive. But I see that project teams would have this data available to them. It would allow them to use whatever tool or technology stack they want without technology being in the way of them doing what they're good at, what they are trained to do, what they're professionals to do. And so they're able to do their job, fulfill their role on any given project without technology getting in the way. Technology is supposed to be there to help and to improve. And sometimes it's too complex. So open data.
You mean when one interface doesn't go to another, it's not helpful?
It's supposed to save time, right?
Yeah, well said. I totally agree with that. And the last question that we always ask, Johnny, I genuinely appreciate you coming in and enlightening us with so many contexts, and we'll see you at Digital Built Week to continue the conversation. But what is that one thing you want to leave our builders and affiliates to think about as they go out there to crush it and grow their business?
Yeah, I think they have to be focused on data. They have to understand how it can be used downstream, provide value to other project stakeholders, ultimately the owner. That's what's going to drive business. So think about how the data can be used and harnessed. Get in the mindset of it's not just about completing one project or another, but how the data is formed and then how can it be shared with other participants. So data focus.
Absolutely love it, man. Johnny, what a pleasure to meet you. Thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story.
Thank you.
Man, I'm just blown away by, you're sure jaded by what you think you know, and you don't know what you don't know, right? Is every one of these conversations, whenever BIM comes up, I'm like, all right, I think I got that dialed in. And then every conversation is a whole nother new conversation. But it's taking people like Johnny and I that have grown up in construction, where he talked at the beginning about how you first donate your time to understand how you can move this thing forward, where he worked with the National CAD standard. But then maybe some of you others raise your hand and say, NIBS? Man, that's as catchy as Johnny Fortune. And then you figure out the National BIM standard for how the masses, and this is so huge, right? Like 2021, this is the infancy. This stuff is huge to where we have to figure out open data standards, because Tribe, you can't do this stuff yourself. And that's the whole goal of what we're all trying to figure out, right? Of you can run between the raindrops, but you have to have a data set that creates the right amount of awareness, that creates the right open standards, and it creates market research, and it creates engagement to the future. That is so exciting. If we could all come together and just say, that is the source of truth. And then we can learn from others, right? I'm really going to do a deep dive of understanding the UK with BIM and follow up. And maybe Johnny Fortune can come in with the master facilitators and maybe bring somebody who this is a standard to us. Maybe it's not. And then maybe we give more reasons instead of rule with an iron fist, because none of us want to tell you this is how it has to be done. Because that's why all these silos are put together and because there is no mainframe. Or maybe there actually is. And the part that I really loved when he talked about is where we have to figure out language and documentation for BIM, and then being real about how digital twins with BIM, this is a real challenge that I don't think is talked near enough, because that is the source. That is the way out of actually making this stuff be real. And it's just like we've had so much conversation around modular, volumetric, offsite, manufactured, all this stuff. This morning, I read the article in Ken Semler and Gary Fleischer, who run the Offsite Builder magazine. And Gary Fleischer is titled, "What Exactly is Offsite Construction?" And I read that, and it's like, man alive. And then offsite alone won't transform the industry. BIM alone won't transform the industry. Call it whatever you want. We've chose to call it system built, because at the end of the day, it's about systems to building really cool stuff. So to us, the standard is system built. Call it whatever you want, but you have to be working together from the right data sets. And then you have to have tools built from a framework. I can't tell you how many construction technologies I've talked about that are probably guys just like me, but they've actually launched construction technologies and they don't even know what BIM is. Think about that, Tribe. We have to figure out this data that is connected, protected, accessible, usable. And at the end of the day, it actually has to be available, and not in the way of a gotcha way where you have to plug this in to plug this in and only works with that plug-in. And that was the last digital build. And that's the one thing I love about Digital Built Week. This group of people are this open forum that you're not intimidated to say, you know what? I raised my hand. I don't even know what BIM is. I know it stands for Building Informational Modeling, but that's about it. Unpack that for me. And I hope you're getting the same out of this like I am, because we must understand how, hopefully, I can transfer my enthusiasm as you are to Construction Tribe and transfer data. Crush it out there.